I hate to break it to you, buddy, but we are both fast approaching middle age. How are you feeling these days? Do you have any like new pains?
My lower back is always hurting me. And anytime I try to take up any new hobby, it's like I immediately get injured. So I'm starting to try to take up Tai Chi and pickleball.
Pickleball, really?
I'm leaning into my later decades of life.
Another thing that worries me as we're getting older is retirement. Like, I do not have a lot saved. How are you doing on that front, Felix?
I mean, I kind of ignored it completely during my 20s and 30s.
I'm in the same boat. Like, I need to take it more seriously. So the other day, I hopped online to take a look at my retirement portfolio, and I was surprised at the sheer number of companies that NHPR's retirement firm had invested my money in. I have dollars in Hennessy.
Hennessy? What?
Costco.
But I guess these are things like that are like in your everyday life that you don't really think about as being on the stock market.
Right, including gasoline, because I have money invested in some of the biggest polluters in the world. ExxonMobil, Chevron. Do you notice that when you looked at yours?
I just assumed that I'm funding fossil fuel companies.
Right, because that's the way retirement works. Our money is spread out over hundreds of different bonds and companies on the stock market. History says that's the safest way to build our savings and make sure we don't run out of cash after we stop working. But it's also kind of weird, right?
Yeah.
All across the country, there are climate activists invested in fossil fuel companies, climate deniers invested in solar panel companies and Tesla. I mean, right now, there are staunch vegans putting some of their hard-earned cash into Tyson Foods.
That's nuts.
No, that's chicken.
that's a good one.
This is Outside In. I'm Nate Hedgie here with producer Felix Poon. And today on the show, we are going to give you the outside inside angle on investing.
Outside inside? Really?
Come on. Give me a break, Felix. And we're going to find out whether you can save for retirement in a way that's both good for the planet and good for your pocketbook. Stay tuned. So before we get into retirement savings, I just want to talk about our age one more time. You and I, we were both born in the 1980s. What was your favorite cartoon growing up?
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, mine was probably He-Man.
Ooh.
But if we were old enough to watch the evening news, we might be paying attention to some really awful stuff that was happening back then. In particular, we'd probably hear a lot about the systemic racism in South Africa. Apartheid.
Our loyalty is not to South Africa, it's to South Africans.
Joe Biden was railing against it in the Senate.
And the South Africans are majority black, and they are being excoriated.
Denzel Washington starred in a movie about it.
It's South Africa for equals.
Yes.
And on college campuses all across the United States, student activists were pushing their universities to stop investing in companies that did business in South Africa.
So by pulling money away, by depriving somebody of essential oxygen, money in this case, you are sending a very strong signal that their actions need to change.
This is Timothy Yee. He was one of those student activists back in the 1980s at the University of California, Berkeley.
Go Bears!
And this movement actually worked. Schools and later banks divested from companies that did business in South Africa. The economy there tumbled, helping usher in the end of apartheid.
This is one of the most important moments in the life of our country.
It was one of the most successful examples of Americans essentially protesting with their wallets to bring about a big change in policy. But this wasn't the first time that we've done this responsible investing.
In the 1600s, the Quakers said they would not buy slave-made products, so they were voting with their dollars. Fast forward to the 1920s, socially responsible investing said, do not invest in tobacco, gambling, and alcohol. I don't know about your listeners, but mea culpa, guilty as charged, I do enjoy an occasional glass of red wine at night. So I'm glad the definition has changed and it's evolved. Now we're into sustainability.
This is where Timothy comes in. Nowadays, he's a financial advisor who helps people manage their retirement portfolio with a specific eye on what's called sustainable investing.
So sustainable investing or green investing can be looked at in several different ways. One of the ways, though, is you are avoiding fossil fuel companies.
We know this can have an impact on the environment. A study this year from the Harvard Business School found that divestment strategies alone reduce the coal industry's carbon emissions by 1 gigaton. That's the equivalent of 20 million cars getting off the road forever. The question is that kind of divesting also good for your retirement? Are fossil fuel companies a risky bet?
If you have a company that is polluting the environment, mistreating its employees, you run the risk of lawsuits, political activism. You could also say you're polluting your own environment. You run the risk of running yourself out of business.
Studies are mixed on whether cutting out fossil fuels from your portfolio will help or hurt your retirement. Some say yes, some say no. Coal is probably a bad long-term bet, but what about natural gas? The market is just super volatile right now. Either way, these fossil fuel companies are known in the financial world as brown firms, big carbon emitters. The idea with sustainable investing is that you take your money from brown firms and then you put them into green firms, low carbon emitters.
Perhaps you would look at solar or at wind, geothermal. Somebody tried to explain algae to me as a source of energy, and I made it 2 sentences into the conversation.
Good old algae.
This all might sound simple to do, but there are over 2,000 companies on the stock market, and they aren't all devoted to energy. I mean, there's insurance, mining, luxury goods, Costco, freaking GameStop. How are you, the average Joe, or maybe I should say the average Felix, with a retirement portfolio, supposed to figure out whether all these companies are green or brown? That's where ESG comes in.
ESG is environmental, social, and governance.
ESG is a set of scores developed a couple decades ago to help us figure out how good a company is, not only when it comes to their pollution, but also social responsibility.
How are you doing in regards to your community, for example? Are you hiring local? Are you giving back to the community? Are you trying to do some sort of social good?
And also governance, like, are there leaders being shady?
So let's simply say Enron. There's an example of not doing it right.
You and I are actually both old enough to know Enron.
There were some shady deals at the top.
So right now, 96% of companies on the S&P 500, they publish annual ESG reports. But that right there is also the problem with ESG. ESG is mostly self-reported. It's not determined by an official third party like fair trade certifications or USDA organic labels.
Are you saying basically companies can simply just make up whatever their environmental impact is and no one would know the better? It's just honor system?
Honor system. Exactly.
There's been so much greenwashing, and investors clearly haven't had the information they've needed to make good decisions.
This is Clara Vondrich. She's with a nonprofit government watchdog, Public Citizen. She says there aren't strong mandatory guidelines for ESG reporting.
So for a long time, funds have been able to sort of count themselves as ESG while simultaneously investing in things that don't match those criteria. So if you look under the hood of a lot of these ESG funds on Wall Street, you'll actually find the Chevrons, the Exxons, the Shells.
Clara is referring here to mutual funds. They're like the pre-cooked dinners of the stock market world. So instead of investing in the individual companies, like the ingredients, you are investing in the whole meal, right? Like a bunch of different ingredients put together on a prepared plate. So one of these mutual funds is called Vanguard ESG. And it's right there in the name, right? ESG. But look at the ingredients of this mutual fund. And they've got more than $12 billion invested in Chevron. That's like going to a vegan restaurant and getting served a chicken burrito.
Do they tell you there's chicken in the burrito, or you only find out once you bite into it?
It's on the menu, but it's in very small print. Clara says this happens because there are no strong rules. But a couple of years ago, the powers that be tried to change this.
Hi, this is Gary Gensler, and welcome to Office Hours.
So this is a video of Gary Gensler. He is the head of the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, which is the governing body of the U.S. stock market. Gary, by the way, looks kind of like a middle-aged Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, this is what Mark Zuckerberg would look like, older and balding.
He even has the Zuck's awkward energy, and he has all these cheesy educational videos on YouTube called Office Hours.
What does the SEC have to do with climate, and why is the chair of the SEC talking about climate?
And in this one, Felix, he's explaining a proposal for a new climate disclosure rule.
This will be good for our economy. It helps companies raise money. It will promote economic activity. And yes, it helps investors put their money in companies that fit their needs.
Essentially, what the SEC wanted to do was give the E in ESG some real teeth. This proposed climate disclosure rule, it would force publicly traded companies to honestly disclose their greenhouse gas emissions, including what's known as their Scope 3 emissions.
And these are the emissions at every stage of a company's value chain. So this is upstream emissions. For example, if you're an auto manufacturer, all the transportation of parts to your factory, all those emissions would be counted, as well as those emissions downstream of your core business. So the actual cars that people drive. And Scope 3 emissions for carbon-intensive companies like oil companies are the lion's share of emissions. 80 to 95% of oil companies' emissions are Scope 3.
So for an automaker, for example, Scope 1 is like at their manufacturing plants, the emissions they directly emit into the atmosphere while they're making these cars.
Right.
Whereas Scope 3 is all those cars being out on the road, burning gas, emitting CO2 in the air. That's Scope 3.
Exactly. And this rule, which I should say was first proposed back in 2022, it would also force companies to disclose how much risk climate change poses to their business. And if they don't disclose all of this accurately, the SEC has a special department
that will go after those companies and basically ask them to first justify or explain why their numbers aren't adding up. And if that fails, then fines, significant fines can be leveled.
Holding giant companies accountable for pollution and climate risk. Sounds almost too good to be true, right?
Don't burst my bubble, Nate.
Well, consider bubble burst because it was. Stay tuned. Hey, this is Outside In. I'm Nate Hedgey here with Felix Poon. And Felix, do you remember Vivek Ramaswamy?
Yeah, the Republican candidate. He's a big fan of Trump.
Yeah.
Kind of a flash in the pan.
Well, he was recently in a YouTube video slamming ESG.
That's a fancy way of saying actually certain progressive political agendas. How do we weave that into our allocation of capital itself? Not necessarily through government.
And he's not the only one. Trump said the exact same thing, though, characteristically, a little bit more bluntly.
The entire ESG scheme is designed to funnel your retirement money to the maniacs on the radical left.
This anger towards ESG, it was also aimed at the SEC's proposed climate disclosure rule, the one that would make ESG have some actual enforcement power. There was a hearing recently in Congress where Republicans and industry groups railed against it. They had a particular ire for its requirement that companies disclose Scope 3 emissions, the ones that come from a company's supply chain or their customers. These industry groups, they used a pull at the heartstrings of the heartland argument.
From weather extremes to challenging markets, from labor struggles to maintaining profitability, a life in agriculture is not for the faint of heart.
This is Bill Schultz. He's a fruit farmer from Michigan, and he testified at the hearing.
Unfortunately, we now face a new and crushing regulation to this list of our challenges.
He said this rule would eventually hurt small businesses, ranchers, and farmers because they're a part of the supply chain and so it'll force them to track their emissions data.
On top of the resources needed to collect this information, growing an apple is not like making a widget. Weather events or plant pests and diseases create hurdles year to year that would deeply complicate the reporting process, and it is clear that the SEC did not account for these complexities and nuances of farms when writing this rule.
This is nonsense.
That's Clara Vondrich with the government watchdog group Public Citizen.
First of all, the SEC rule has a safe harbor. It explicitly excludes small businesses and small farmers from being burdened by the rule. Second, the rule also provides that companies can use reasonable estimates and assumptions.
But all this pressure had an impact.
Paul Munter, Shaz Niazi, Aaron Nelson.
In early March, I sat down at my computer to watch the SEC commissioners vote on the rule. And by the way, Felix, this is an incredibly boring meeting. Like, think suits, glasses, a lot of people frowning, a guy who spent 5 minutes to thank every single person who worked on the rule.
Jessica Walker, Roki Young.
But once I got through all this drabness and the formalities, I quickly realized that the SEC had bowed to pressure and drastically weakened the rule. Here's Gary Gensler.
Based upon the public feedback, we're not requiring Scope 3 emission disclosure at this time.
So that whole thing about car companies counting the gas that's burned in cars? Off the table. And if emissions are below a certain threshold, they don't even have to track them at all. Now, they did keep the requirement that public companies disclose how much climate change poses a risk to their business, but that whole lack of robust emissions data, it's a shame for guys like Timothy Yi, the investment advisor. He says getting frustrated at the climate disclosure rule, or ESG, it's like getting angry at the nutrition facts on a box of cereal or the directions your GPS gives you.
My GPS is giving me additional data. I wasn't doing woke driving. Same with ESG. It's simply giving you additional data, more research to make a decision. You are the one who decides, do I buy, do I sell, do I do this, do I do that? So that's all ESG is. It's more data, more insight beyond the bottom line.
But even if you had all that data, some experts think the entire concept is kind of flawed.
So let me start with my co-author, Sam Hartsmith, and I. We actually consider ourselves to be environmentalists. We are very concerned about the risks of global climate change.
This is Kelly Hsu. She's a finance professor at Yale. And if she sounds like she's hedging her bets right now, it's because she published a white paper recently that goes against the prevailing ideas about divesting from brown companies. It all started with a worry.
Let's suppose sustainable investors avoid investing in all brown firms, and this succeeds in punishing them, moving them closer to bankruptcy. What we were worried about is, to the extent that we have observed firms being financially distressed in the past, they actually avoid investing in any project that takes a long-term time to pay off. And you know, projects that involve transitioning toward greener production tend to be pretty capital intensive upfront, very expensive. And firms that are worried about generating cash right now don't tend to take on those investments. So then we started looking in the data.
And this is what they found. Many of the brown firms, when they were doing well, were on a natural path towards lower greenhouse gas emissions.
Now, perhaps we all wish they would move faster, and I share those concerns. But what we see in the data is when these firms have difficulty accessing outside capital, when they're strapped for cash, they actually tend to slow down these clean energy transitions.
She says this might not be a big problem for dying industries like coal. I mean, she's not saying that giving money to Chevron is good for sustainability. But what about, say, a concrete company, big tech and data centers, a car company like Ford? If they're working to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions, even by a little bit, Kelly says it actually has a bigger impact on the planet than investing in some so-called green firms.
Because the set of green firms currently classified as green tend to be service sector firms. Again, insurance, healthcare, financial services firms that don't pollute much by the nature of their business. they really have maxed out on how much they can help the environment in terms of minimizing their emissions. That actually matters less for the environment than a similarly sized brown firm reducing their emissions by a mere 1%.
Wait, is Kelly saying, let's give more money to the fossil fuel companies? That's how we're going to fight climate change?
I think she's saying, instead of completely divesting Felix, maybe we should be trivesting, like looking for brown companies that have a solid path towards a more sustainable future.
So you could consider a manager of a brown firm thinking, well, if I were to clean up my act and become more green, maybe investors will like me, reward me with cheap access to capital. So I'm willing to do this because of the carrot that's in place from sustainable investors.
The problem I see is it's really hard for someone with a 401k to tell the difference between greenwashing and actual plans for transition. A lot of companies understand they need to pay lip service to climate concerns, but which ones are BS?
It does seem like you need to know a lot more of what's going on under the hood of a company.
You can do it on your own, or your financial advisor can do it on their own with data. And that's where something like the climate disclosure rule might actually help. Even though the rule got pared down, the EU recently passed similar, tougher regulations, ones that include Scope 3 emissions, which means that roughly 3,000 US businesses who operate in Europe are still going to have to disclose more about their climate risk. All of this is going to help folks like Timothy Yi, the financial advisor, sift through which firms are serious about transition and which ones are not.
Market forces will dictate which companies survive and which don't. I could be, excuse the expression, hell-bent on making buggy whips, and I make the best buggy whip. But when the automobile came around, well, I could keep making buggy whips, and mine were the best, but nobody was buying buggy whips because the horse and carriage was gone.
All of this is a gamble, right? Like, there are no guarantees. No sure bets. Brown can become green. Green can become brown. Green can also become, well, red. Like a few years ago, Felix, I put some money into a Chinese electric car company that I thought might totally take off. It never did. It was on Robinhood. I don't know if you ever did Robinhood or not.
No, I didn't. We're using a lot of color metaphors here.
But like, bottom line, if the market is a gamble, I think you have to ask yourself, you know, what kind of future do you want to gamble on? That's it for today. But let us know, are you invested in companies you don't agree with? Are you planning on changing that? And if so, how? Shoot us an email at outsidein@nhpr.org. We're also trying out Threads. You can find us at Outside In Radio, and you can find me at Nate Hedgie. Are you in Threads, Felix?
Yeah, no. I have a Threads account, but I'm not active on it.
I think that's like 90% of Americans right now.
Exactly.
I, Nate Hedgie, I wrote this episode. It was edited by Taylor Quimby. Our team also includes Felix Poon. Thanks for jumping in, Felix.
Glad to be here.
And Justine Paradise. Rebecca Lavoie is NHPR's Director of Podcasts. Music in this episode came from Blue Dot Sessions. Our theme music is by Breakmaster Cylinder. Outside In is a production of NHPR.
Sam Crawfee, Misaka Warusa Wikarana, Julio Girardi, Charles Woodworth, Dwi Sianto Mansour, Barham Hamidi, Julie Marlowe, Jim Yu, Anthony Santoro, Moxie Zenfler.